on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
Five Live.
It's about this time we started doing movie chat, about this time it started to rain, so...
I had a word.
Did you?
I did. I said about 3:20, light sprinkling would be fine.
See what you can do.
See what you can do.
So here you are, your sporting education continues.
Yeah.
And we're on the roof here, we're in the Five Live awning.
Can we just point out to the listeners that what you just did about 20 minutes ago, you abandoned me. You actually left me on my own in Sentinel. I was sitting there watching the tennis. You said, just sit there, you know, like you do to a child. And I did. And then you just went. And I wanted to go to the Lost Children tent. I was completely lost in Wimbledon. And it's a town, this place. It's not like, you know, there's like everywhere you turn, there's a different court. And there's somebody, they're all wearing the same thing, so it looks the same. I was really upset.
You were hiding behind John Inverdale, and I didn't know you were there. That's the truth.
You weren't looking because you don't care.
You're sounding pathetic. Shrek, we've got a review.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to whatever happened to me. Shrek reviews coming up. Also, Hostel. I don't know if, depending on how much rain there is, will depend on whether we get to the Flying Scotsman and Shut Up and Sing and sketches of Frank Gehry. Anyway, the box office top 10 this week. You can, of course, take part. It takes a little bit longer for the emails to reach us in our tent on the top of the media centre here. But we continue anyway. The box office top 10 consists of these films. At 10, Wedding Days with a Z.
Not as funny as it ought to be. It's about as funny as a film which uses a Z in the phrase Wedding Days. It's wacky and zany, but not that wacky and zany.
Number 9, Zhum Barabar Zhum.
Still waiting for audience reviews of that. Again, not press screened over here, so you know, if you've seen it, send us an email, tell us what you think of it.
8 is Tell No One.
Which I really like, based on a best-selling, which you've read, right? You've read the Harlan Coben novel, apparently. Didn't you say you had?
No, I didn't.
You just lied.
Excuse me. No, I just never said it.
No, you did say it. You said, oh, yeah, based on a novel by Harlan Coben, like in a way to imply that you were literary and I wasn't. But it's a very good American thriller, French adaptation. It overly twists itself at the end, but the basic story is at the beginning of it, somebody loses their wife, he believes him to be dead, and 8 years later he gets emails from the grave. It's sort of like The Vanishing in reverse, but I liked it very much.
Are we done yet at 7?
And we really, really ought to be, but there will probably be another one, which is a real shame. This already is a sequel. Why it is that these kind of films have sequels, I just don't understand. Presumably the numbers stack up, but nothing else does. It's really terrible. It's meant to be a family comedy, and it says something about the way that family movies have gone, that is now what passes for a family comedy.
Ma Vie en Rose at 6.
You see, now I'm not going to do my Edith Piaf impression again because I got such a bad response last week.
Reviews were poor.
What, of the film or of my
of your,
Edith Piaf?
Of your
Would you
impression.
Like to have a go and see whether you can do it any better?
No.
My problem with La Vie en Rose is, I think, Marianne Cotillard is doing a very, very good impersonation of Piaf, although obviously she's not doing the singing herself because she can't sing as well as I can. The problem is that there's a big hole in the centre of the film, which is that the director doesn't really know how to make the narrative work. So you get all these different bits of her life in all the wrong order, and you end up looking at the changing hair, wigs and teeth, and just being, you know, baffled by the makeup. And only a French movie could miss out the whole of World War II. And there's a very interesting chapter in Piaf's life because actually, you know, she sang for the high-ranking Germans, but she also did her bit for the resistance. This is very, very well known nowadays. How you can leave that out of such a short life, oops, it didn't happen, is beyond me.
Number 5 is Vacancy.
The thing with this, the torture porn articles, okay, torture porn is something which has been invented by the media and it doesn't really, it doesn't really exist. Vacancy is the kind of the high end, the sort of the mainstream.
Do you want to tie in Vacancy at 5 and Captivity at 4 as their next?
Should I do them together?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Captivity.
In brief, you know.
Captivity is a really, really stupid, heartless, soulless movie that has been completely recut. They reshot a third of it in order to cash in on the alleged torture porn craze. Vacancy is at least a good, honest, no messing nuts and bolts slasher movie in which two people check into a hotel that's clearly the Bates Motel. The guy behind the counter is twitchy and itchy and all the rest of it, and they get into the hotel and then surprised to discover that it's a set of a snuff movie. They're the only people who are surprised. But of the two of them, Vacancy, fairly well handled, falls apart at the end, but you know, it's good empty tosh. Captivity, really sleazy, nasty, rancid rubbish. And what a shame that Roland Joffé still has his name on it. And indeed that Larry Cohen does. I mean, Larry Cohen made Cue the Winged Serpent. That's a great film.
Neil Murchison in Aberdeen said, Dear Dr. Mr. Mayo, in response to the U2 Elkie Brooks argument, which took place 2 weeks ago, Good Doctor was indeed correct that the version of Lilac Wine, great, you'll see why I'm reading it at this point, gracing Tell No One is a masterpiece. The moment he mentioned the said song, but not the artist involved, I immediately thought of Jeff Buckley and not Elkie Brooks, as Simon did. However, whilst the Doctor rightly claimed that your own reversal was masterfully executed, he failed to notice the resounding screech of his own rather more conspicuous U-turn.
Go on.
previously, as stated by Dr. Kermode on the Friday Film Reviews, quote, there is no such thing as torture porn. Such films are nothing except incredibly stupid and adolescent. Kermode from June the 15th on Vacancy. I'm not for this minute buying into this nonsense about torture porn. It is just nonsense. It's just
rubbish.
Editors looking for something to fill the pages.
Exactly.
Then, 1 week and 180 degrees later on Captivity. It's really foul in a real prurient, leery, misogynistic in a way that you didn't think was legal anymore. It's really sleazy, nasty and cheap and horrible to women and horrible to humanity. I feel the Doctor made his assumption about torture porn a little too soon, considering one of the central films of this so-called genre is Captivity.
Can I be clear about this? I mean, it's a very well-made point, incidentally. And
he does add, let the wittertainment continue.
Yeah, no, it's a very well-made point. I want to be absolutely clear about this. Torture porn is an idea that was made up by newspaper editors. And the thing about Captivity is that Captivity was recut in order to make it fill the bill of torture porn. So Captivity was made in 2005, right? 2006, all this stuff starts to kick off. The people, the American distributors say, I want you to go back and reshoot a third of it in order to turn it into the, in inverted commas, classic torture porn movie. I mean, it's one of those weird cases of life imitating, no, the other way around, art imitating life, that basically they've recut the film in order to make it fulfill a brief that had already been written up by journalists. And I mean, it's really, it's pitiful and sad. It's not radically different. It's not a new thing. Everyone's saying, oh, guy, it's a new thing. It isn't. There's always been sleazy, stupid, adolescent, misogynistic rubbish in the horror genre. The difference is I thought we'd all grown out of it. I mean, I just thought, you know, we went through the wars in the 70s with all this stuff and we had all the arguments. And Wes Craven
made
last
through the wars in the 70s?
Yeah, the slasher wars. They were very important. They were very, very important.
I missed the slasher wars.
Yeah, but you were too busy sort of, you know, doing pop music and all that sort of stuff. Some of us were out there fighting,
like everybody else,
fighting for the right of Wes Craven to, you know, to say that actually Last House on the Left is an art house movie as well as a grindhouse movie. Now, of course, I can't even say grindhouse because everyone thinks of Quentin Tarantino, and I wouldn't want to put that hefty albatross around anyone's neck. But torture porn doesn't exist, but Captivity is a film that's been redesigned to make it look like it does.
I'm losing the will to live. It's a bit like the Tipsarevich match, this. So that's 5 and 4.
I spoke to him about it as well, and he said the same thing. He said, no, it's not true. There's no such thing as torture porn.
That's your Serbian accent, is it?
What do you want me to do? Slovakian? Do you want me to do it in Slovakian?
It's exactly the same.
No, it doesn't exist. It's just somebody made it up. And he said that between Serbs.
Pirates is at 3, I think, you know.
Covered in full detail. Can you still download the Pirates?
No, you can't. No, we do refer listeners to the previous broadcast. Ocean's 13, is it number 2?
I mean, it's not as bad as Ocean's 12. It's not as good as Ocean's 11. It does have the charismatic black hole that is Julian Sands. And it is, in the end, all those people enjoying themselves much too much and enjoying the check and enjoying the company and having a good time in Las Vegas. And I think, as we said in some detail before, Las Vegas, this is not a place to go and have a good time. Las Vegas is a cesspit on the face of the earth, and it shouldn't be there. You know, you should just be able to go straight the way through Death Valley and not have to deal with Las Vegas at all. And any film that says, you know, hey, Las Vegas, it ain't like what it used to be. No, the only time Las Vegas was good was when it was a desert.
At the box office, number 1 this week, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, or as you're about to say, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
So much correspondence on whether or not that film actually conforms to the structure of the comic book, and yes, it does. That doesn't make it any good. I mean, just for, as I said before, and I'll say it again, there is more about the mythology of Silver Surfer in the Richard Gere remake of Abu Dussouf than there is in 4, Rise of the Silver Surfer. It's shiny and brittle, and it's not going to offend anybody, although I really could live without the Jessica Alba role, because it seems to me strange that in these superhero movies, like, that's fine, you can say to men, well, it's okay, you can look like a rock face and that's fine, but the women have to look like Jessica Alba and have to lose all their clothes at some point. And if you're going to aim it at a young audience, I'd rather you said, actually, that's not really very good. There's more to being a female superhero than, you know, losing your clothes.
Now, what we should do, we should probably hold on to Shrek a couple of minutes away from the news. So the big movies are Hostel Part 2 and Shrek.
Hostel Part 2, sorry, but it's just one of those films that deserves to be called Hostel Part 2.
Right, so those reviews coming up the other side of the news.
Are we doing news? I thought we were just carrying straight on.
No, of course not.
I thought rain stopped news.
That never happens. Give us a couple of reviews of movies which will be peripheral.
Okay, peripheral. Shut Up and Sing, Dixie Chicks documentary, co-directed by Barbara Koppel. You know the deal is that just before the Iraq War, the Dixie Chicks were over here. They were on stage. They said in a rash moment, you know, we're embarrassed that the President of the United States is from Texas. Huge booing and intake of breath and garbled nonsense in America. Everyone's saying, oh,
I don't think there was any booing in Hammersmith, though.
No, in Hammersmith, there was huge cheers. It was absolutely fantastic.
There
That's
weren't
why
too
they
many
said it.
Texan Republicans there.
There were no Texan Republicans in Hammersmith at all. What happened was it was reported in the British press and nobody noticed. It was reported again in the British press and nobody noticed. Then it was picked up in the American American press, and the next thing they were burning records in the style of, remember after John Lennon said, you know, I think we're bigger than Jesus, which always reminds me of that fantastic joke in the Beatles and in the Ruttles, in which he says he didn't say we're bigger than God, what he said was we're bigger than Rod, meaning Rod Stewart, and he was right because Rod Stewart wouldn't break big for another 7 years. It's a funny little documentary. I'm not a huge Dixie Chicks fan, I quite like them, but the funny thing about it is that in the sort of director's intention statement it says, you know, it's a great portrait of independent artists defining their right to free speech. No, it isn't. It's a nice film about some nice people who make some nice music who said something that was perfectly passable on stage and got hideously blackballed for it. They were never really that political. It was just a kind of mistake. And although they, you know, what they did was they stood by it in as much as they didn't retract it. It wasn't like they said anything really, really terrible. The real interest is just how hysterical and overtop the American reaction was. But it's perfectly fine, and there's some nice banjo playing in and some nice fiddle playing in. I just don't think it's quite the hard-hitting political work that perhaps Barbara Koppel thinks it is.
This email from Alex says, Simon and Mark, started when my partner Mary used to listen to your movie reviews on the way back home from work. Harmless fun, you might think. Then we moved to Australia and started downloading the podcast. By the way, we should say hello to Jason Isaacs.
Hello to Jason Isaacs. Hello to David Morrissey.
Are you about to see Jason Isaacs in Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah, because you've seen it already.
I've seen it already and feel quite smug, actually.
Yeah, it's really quite bad being in a room with you when you've seen a film that I haven't seen. And very briefly, do I get a review from you?
Well, we were told when leaving that you're not allowed to review it. But I thought, okay. I think that's nonsense.
Okay.
So I'll review it.
Okay.
I think it's very good, actually.
There was a review in the paper today, isn't there?
It's very dark, it's quite menacing, but the main revelation, and obviously you'll do the definitive version next week, is that Daniel Radcliffe is a really good actor.
Okay.
Really good actor.
But those who saw him on stage in Equus said the same thing.
Anyway,
and said other things as well.
This continues. However, and here is the problem, it has now got to the point where the good doctor's word on films has become gospel in our house. Any film I suggest we see is met with a response, Kermode rated it, Kermode didn't rate it. This has got to the extent now where she's just hired The Exorcist on DVD. What advice do you have for me? How can I cure her of the influence of Kermode?
Well, the first question is, which version of The Exorcist has she hired?
Just don't listen.
There are three
Stop
versions.
The podcast.
There are three versions. There's the version you've never seen, which, of course, I have seen. There's the usual version. Actually, there's four versions. There's the re-release stereo version.
Okay, that's quite
there's
enough.
The TV version.
Alex, my advice is just stop listening. Just stop the stop the podcast, just stop the downloading. Everyone else can continue. This is Five Live from Wimbledon. Let's do some movies while we're here. Mark Kermode with some reviews. The big poster movie, the one most people will be looking forward to, is Shrek the Third.
Shrek the Third. The third, it's the summer of threequels, as we've already established. So we're being attacked by a wasp. You know, we've had Spider-Man 3, which was way too long. We've had Pirates of the Caribbean 3, which was way too long, although that was already way too long in parts 1 and 2. Now, Shrek the Third. Story is that Shrek and Fiona are standing in for the royalty in a brief hiatus, but it looks like Shrek is going to inherit the crown, which he doesn't want to do. The only way he can not inherit the crown is he has to go off and find Arthur, voiced by Justin Timberlake, who I hear is a modern popular singer who shall have, you know, will ring bells with the young audience. Isn't he the guy who wears the funny hat?
Those under 30.
Him. Meanwhile, however, the USP, the particular selling point this time round, is that Fiona is going to have babies. So Shrek has to come to terms with fatherhood. So all the plot stuff, which is all just, it's just waffle, it's just, you know, nonsense, to get him out on a quest, because you have to. You can't have a Shrek movie unless he's on a quest. He's in Far Far Away, he's arrived there, he's there, he's happy ever after. Actually, he's been happy ever after twice. So they've got to kick him out of the house, go find Artie, while Fiona sits around and broods. Anyway, more of the same, or less of the same, actually. So a number of things to be said. First one is, and it is the most obvious one, Mike Myers' accent is slipping somewhat. The question about why Mike Myers does Shrek Scottish, you ever see that film So I Married an Axe Murderer?
Do you know, it slipped off my essential list.
It's actually very good. It's a very funny cult movie. And he started doing the Scottish accent in this. Of course, he has, you know, British connections. And then he kind of followed it through with, you know, with the Austin Powers movies. And then he ended up doing Shrek in a Scottish accent for no good reason. It does seem that by the third one, he's kind of forgotten why he thought doing a Scottish accent was funny in the first place. Second thing to be said is, the main thing here is fatherhood, coming to terms with fatherhood, embracing the fact of fatherhood. Fatherhood is going to be a wonderful thing. And there are several times in which the donkey, voiced by Eddie Murphy, says, being a father is really great, which is particularly ironic, because that Eddie Murphy just come out of this great big public bun fight in which, you know, it's nothing to do with me, Mel B, nothing to do with the genetic test, all that sort of stuff. It's like, presumably that was all, you know, the film was recorded before all that stuff blew up. Thirdly,
you're well up with celebrity gossip.
Oh, it's impossible to avoid that. Even I know about that. I mean, I think it's been in the Barnet Times. Thirdly, you do get a sense that they're all sort of going, well, you know, we need to bring out another Shrek movie. We're going to have Shrek 4 is going to come out in 2010. We just need to do it. And it feels terribly perfunctory. There is nothing in the new one that matches the great audacious moments of the first one. I mean, there is no music choice, for example, that is as wonderful as the use of Hallelujah in the first one. And can I... Hallelujah in the first one is not sung by Rufus Sewell. Rufus Sewell sings it on the soundtrack album.
Do you mean Rufus Wainwright?
Who did I say? Rufus Wainwright, the singing foghorn, you know, who just, you know, takes all these great songs and it just completely tramples all over
them. But bizarrely, if you buy the soundtrack, you get John Cale singing it.
Yeah, but it's not Rufus Wainwright doing it, but there's Rufus Wainwright on that soundtrack.
Oh, right, it's the other way around. Rufus is on the CD, John Cale sings it on the...
Exactly, anyway. It's just bizarre. Anyway, but it doesn't make any difference, because funnily enough, when you get the DreamWorks logo at the beginning nowadays, that's the thing that you hear is the sound of Hallelujah, because they've actually adopted it as their theme tune, in the same way that, for example, Disney adopted, you know, When You Wish Upon a Star from Pinocchio.
So if only they used the Elkie Brooks original.
It would have been so much better. So you've got this weird situation. When Shrek started, it was kind of like DreamWorks taking a pop at Disney. It was like they were the anarchic voice. And now what they have on their hands is a franchise that has become so successful that, in fact, if anything deserves to be knocked, it is them. You get all the usual stuff. So for the kids, you get the, you know, the poo bum fart jokes, which is absolutely fine. You get the puns that are sort of almost towards rude words, but not quite. They try and say Worcestershire in a way which almost implies that Eddie Murphy uses a rude word, but he doesn't quite. And there are lots of movie jokes. And especially for me, there's a whole section in which, because Shrek has to come to terms with the idea of having a kid, he envisages a pram, which is the Rosemary's Baby pram, and he envisages a whole mountain of green spew coming out of it, which of course is The Exorcist. And then he gets set upon by crawling green gribblies, which of course is The Brood. So we managed to do, you know, three films that I really like in a brief... And about 2 years ago, I would have said, oh, that in itself was funny and cute and lovely and charming. And now I kind of feel like it's not any of those things anymore. It just feels a little bit forced. On the good side, it isn't going to offend anybody. It is 93 minutes long, which is how long this kind of thing ought to be. I mean, actually, you know, 88 would have been probably better. And it's not without moments of charm. There's a very funny sort of dying frog sequence with John Cleese as the frog prince, and he gets the most out of that. Eric Idle does one of the voices, and he gets the very least out of that. And, you know, there are the usual sort of charming gay... Is that your phone?
Nope.
Well, okay, it's fine. It's not mine. My phone doesn't make that noise.
It'll be John Inverdale,
fine.
Curses.
So, you know, there are moments in it that are charming and sweet and nice. And I have to confess, as I always do, that in the final moment when everything is resolved and we all realise that, hey, being a father is good, I cried. Because I can't not. And I'm sure that if you take your young kids to see it, and I'm definitely going to take my young kids to see it, they'll enjoy it at the moment that it's there. But what they're not going to do is cherish it in the way that they would cherish something like the original Shrek, because it was so edgy and so spiky and so great that they could say they love it, and I could say, yes, I love it too, and it's for different reasons, but we could somehow meet in the middle. Funnily enough, an awful lot of Shrek seems to be aimed at parents who are having to take their kids to see Shrek. It's all about how your life completely changes once you've got kids.
Simon in Clapham says, I took my 2-year-old, nearly 3, daughter to see Shrek 3 last week. It was her first visit to the cinema. Yeah. It went well, apart from my wife and myself being bored out of our minds.
You see, there we go.
The story was poor, Timberlake's voice annoying, and it failed the Kermode 6 Laugh Comedy Guide.
Yes, it does.
I managed 3 with a gingerbread man's life flashing before his eyes being the best. Not one I'd recommend. Keep up the wittertaining. Simon, thank you. We've done you Shrek. Hostel, another Hostel.
Hostel part deux. Eli Roth, you know, made a great splash on the scene when he arrived at Cabin Fever. He obviously had a lot of talent. Since then, he has just proceeded to squander that talent. I think the worst thing that's happened to him is he started hanging out with Quentin Tarantino. So suddenly he makes Hostel. Now we get Hostel part two, pretty much exactly the same set as before. There's a torture factory in Slovakia where businessmen, and in this case businesswomen, because hey, it's an equal opportunities grindhouse movie, go to do hideous things to each other. The most horrible thing about this is, I think that Eli Roth probably has some talent, but I really think he needs to be slapped and sent to bed with no supper until he's decided to grow up and stop squandering what talent he has on this infantile piffle. There are several things that are wrong with Hostel. The first is that it exists at all. I mean, Hostel in itself was a self-contained, you know, post-saw gag, fine, thank you very much, leave, move on. But no, the idea of Hostel 2 is completely cynical. The twist this time is that the three people are, he sends on three girls, okay? And he says, oh, well, this makes me, obviously, this is so much more interesting, not three boys, there's some three girls in it. One of them is Heather Matarazzo, and this is a real shame. Heather Matarazzo is a very interesting actress. The first time I ever saw her was in Welcome to the Dollhouse, and she gets nothing to do in this film apart from be stripped, humiliated, and treated really, really horribly. There are Elspeth Bartery-style bloodbaths. Again, hey, the suggestion is that, you know what, you know, the women are just as bad as the men, but that's not what he's interested in at all. What he's interested in is reliving all his infantile fantasies of 70s sleaze movies and getting people like Bijou Phillips into trussed up in this incredibly leery fashion and then behaving abominably to them under the sort of pretext of occasionally, oh, there's some oh, it's all to do with Abu Ghraib, oh, it's all to do with media images of violence, oh, it's, no, it isn't, Eli, no, it isn't, you know it isn't, I know it isn't, your mum knows it isn't, you should be ashamed of yourself, you should just stop this, because it doesn't do anybody any good. And the problem with all this is that, you know, you sit there for ages and ages arguing that there is more to horror than the kind of really low-end sludge. And most of the low-end sludge used to be made really cheaply. Now, the low-end sludge is made expensively. And people like Quentin Tarantino waltz around telling everybody how clever it is to make low-end sludge. You know, oh, it's really, really great. Now we can be leery and sexist and misogynist and all the rest of it all over again. But we'll do it with some irony. It's a bit postmodern. You know, postmodernism means never having to say you're sorry. And I just think... it's like the 70s never happened. And most of the time, it's just innocuous and stupid. But in the case of Hostel, I did find myself thinking, you know, I might walk out, not because I think it's grotesquely offensive, but I think it's so stupid, it's so boring, it's so dull, it's so predictable, it's so depressing that this is what it has come to. So my two suggestions. Firstly, put Quentin Tarantino in prison forever. Secondly...
the charge?
Just crimes against cinema, being completely full of himself and having watched a whole bunch of movies when he was an adolescent and having never, ever moved on.
It'd be extraordinary if being full of yourself was a criminal offence.
Yeah.
We'd have to build a whole...
sharing a cell with him, you know. But so firstly, him in prison for a long time. Secondly, Eli Roth sent away and told to make a low-budget costume drama about people discovering love in the Arctic. And get... remember how to make films, okay? And thirdly, all those people who are now going to do this, you know, oh, it's great, it's really great, you know, I went to see it, it was so edgy, it was so disgusting, it was so... no, it isn't. It's none of those things. But I mean, the worst thing about it is, if you want to see something really edgy and really, really disgusting, okay, you know, go and get a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie. Go and get the original version of Last House on the Left. I mean, the point is, that is sleazy and disgusting and horrible, but with a purpose. It actually has a brain in its head. This is just empty, vacuous nonsense. It's like a bunch of teenage boys in the playground who've been given a movie-making kit to go away, and they really all ought to have their horrible little heads banged together and told to stop it.
Michael in London, back on Shrek here. It passed Dr. K's 5 laugh test. I thought it was a 6 laugh test.
I think it's inconsistent, isn't it? 6, I think, is, you know, we're home and dry. 5 is the base minimum.
Anyway, Michael says, okay. It was funny. The whole cinema was laughing, but most importantly, compared to the other third films out this year,
yes.
It was a good length.
Exactly. That's the key thing. The best thing that you can say about Shrek 3, and I don't say this lightly, incidentally, the best thing you can say about it is that it's 93 minutes long. You know, as opposed to 3 hours long.
That's not really the best thing to be said about a movie.
Well, no, but you'd be surprised, because brevity is a real virtue, and it's something that people just simply don't understand. What they think is... I mean, funnily enough, in terms of animation, it's much harder to make a long animated film because it takes such a long time to do it. In terms of the Pirates movies, well, they just film Johnny Depp going for hours and hours and hours, and they don't want to cut any of it because he's so funny. Johnny's so funny.
We've got 3 minutes left. What's worth a mention?
Well, you know what? The Flying Scotsman... it's got some very, very mixed reviews. We have Brian Cox on the show. It's a story of Graham Aubrey, however you pronounce it, who designed this special kind of bike that he designed partly out of bits of his washing machine. And he then went on to break a couple of world records and to really, really annoy the World Cycling Federation authority, because he was unconventional. And he had this whole sort of, you can see this on the vodcast, he had this whole way of being on his bike stretched out almost like a superhero. And it's got a central performance by Johnny Lee Miller. And it's an old-fashioned kind of guy triumph over his inner demons by cycling. And it's one of those, you know, you said before, rather sarcastically, you know, Chariots of Fire on wheels. But there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think the nice thing about it is it doesn't overstretch itself. It's not brilliantly made, but it's perfectly competently made. It doesn't go into great detail about his bipolar disorder, although we do see that he's somebody who's wrestling with, you know, severe emotional stress. It's just one of those kind of good, old-fashioned, well-hearted, you know, well-intentioned, decent kind of movies about ordinary people doing something slightly extraordinary and therefore becoming better as a result of it. And just in the week that it's been of the big-budget cynicism of Shrek and of the sheer dreck of Hostel 2 and the, frankly, you know, not as interesting as it should be, Shut Up and Sing... I thought, you know what? I quite like this film. I quite like it. It's good for it. I cheered as it went past the finishing line.
I've been trying to find a text and failing desperately. By the way, the podcast is available. The vodcast is available as well. Details from the website. Just a reminder on that. Someone sent me a fantastic idea, maybe for an art design project, that there should be a box set of the Pirates movies, and that you should be paid to do an extra commentary. Because he said he would pay very, very good money to have that. What do you think?
Well, you know what we could do? We could just record a commentary, you know, not to do with the film, and then somebody could download it. And then if you want to match it up to the film, that's your business. And that way you wouldn't get across the film company.
Now, that would be a very good idea. A movie of the week is...
Well, funnily enough, movie of the week is a film called Golden Door, which we haven't managed to get to, which is about a Sicilian family coming to America in the early 20th century. And it's a very, Nuovo Mundo, and it's a very, very interesting movie. So, you know, if you get a chance to go and see that, go and see that.
This is 2 weeks on the trot now.
Well, I'll do
this.
It if you haven't got time. No, they're going to start hitting the ball around.
I'm going to give you 15 seconds to do the movie of the week, because you can't actually say the movie of the week is something we haven't mentioned 12 seconds from now.
Okay, it's a story of a family in Sicily, early 20th century, coming from Sicily to America. It is both religious and also very down-to-earth. It's about the transient and the transcendent. It features a terrific central performance. Not so sure about Charlotte Gainsbourg, but I thought it was a very interesting, if flawed, but in an interesting way, mini epic about where we all come from and where we're all going to.
Where are we going to? Well, we're going back to the commentary box.
Yeah,
that's where we're going.
Fr-da-da-dum.
Mark, thank you very much indeed.
Why do I bother with you?
I have absolutely not ceased wondering that last time.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.